This is Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tonight's subject, the next president and why it should be Dick Gregory. Tonight's guest, comedian presidential candidate Dick Gregory. You speak for yourself and ask your questions directly by calling Collect Night Call's national phone number, area code 212-749-3311, or in the New York area, 866-5010. Night Call's host in New York City is Del Shields.
Good evening. We welcome another station and another major market to the Night Call Network tonight, WAOK in Atlanta, Georgia. Welcome aboard. Our guest tonight requires no introduction, so he won't have one. He's Dick Gregory. He used to be a comedian. Now he's a presidential candidate. Dick Gregory is standing by in New York to answer your questions and share your comments and conversation on why Dick Gregory should be the next president. You may speak to him direct over our national phone number, which is area code 212-749-3311. And, of course, you may call us collect. That's national calls on area code 212-749-3311. In the New York area, you may call us at 866-5010. That's local calls only on 866-5010. Mr. Gregory, good evening, sir.
Hello, brother. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, and thank you so much for being with us
this
evening.
It's my pleasure, believe me.
Tell me, why should you be the next president?
Well, one, I feel that I qualify, and all you have to do to qualify, really, to run for the presidency of the United States is be 35 years old and a citizen. But I don't only feel that I qualify to be the president of the United States, but I feel that I have a qualification to being the president of any country where there's people. You see, there's no college on the face of this earth that teaches presidentology. And so you can't go nowhere to learn how to be president. I think the one thing you have to have, especially in these trying times, is to be in tuned to the needs of the people. And this is why I say, out of the candidates that have been mentioned, I am the most qualified because that, well, the whole world knows I am in tune to the needs of the people.
When you say you're in tune to the needs of the people, are you speaking of all people or just black people?
Yes, of all people. I think black people need, you know, a special type of entombment because of the problems that exist that America have snubbed off so much. But there's an Indian problem which we Americans have created. You have a problem with Mexicans in this country. We have a problem with the Puerto Ricans. We have a Jewish problem. And all of these problems, you know, that until the President of the United States can bring himself to understand that all of these problems exist and all of these problems will have to be solved, we're going to have trouble. What happens if we get a president in the morning that solves the black man's problems overnight, and I literally mean this, and get us in World War III the next morning? What good does it do us to have our rights if we can't have them but for 24 hours?
In the June 25th issue of Look magazine, we'd like to quote a paragraph. This is a story that's related to you, or about you, rather, and Saul Alinsky, who was our guest last night. And the paragraph reads, "If you think you can stop a revolution by giving the black man an education, a job, and a house, while you still call him a nigger, you're out of your mind." Now, could you elaborate just briefly for us on this?
Yes. You see, first, we have to understand that revolution is an extension of evolution. Now, evolution is a gradual naturistic change that after long periods of time, it leads into revolution, which is quick change. Now, if you want to stop this form of revolution about to lead, evolution leading into revolution, you have to go out and stop the causes. In other words, if a woman got pregnant, do you go and give her a good job to stop her from being pregnant? Do you go and give her a different neighborhood to stop her? Or do you go in and perform certain things, which we call abortions? And then all at once you alleviate a certain thing. And I say to solve the problems which this country is headed to today, we've gone beyond a job. For instance, the Kerner Report on Civil Disorders, it said that the problem with the country today, as far as black folks are concerned, is white racism. And I'm saying that sounds good, but white racism is not black folks' problem. You see, white folks do not raise their hand and swear to uphold the United States Constitution, but the politicians do. And if the 50 governors in America who would raise their hand and take their oath of office to swear to uphold the United States Constitution, if they lived up to their oath of office, white racism couldn't affect me or no other black person. And so I say that they said, you know, white racism, because who was heading the report? Politicians. Now, the other error, they said that it would take $80 billion to solve the problem of black folks in America. And I said, no, again, you know, we're not foreigners. Don't give us no foreign aid, and you're not going to buy this problem. In order to solve the problems confronting this country today, there's one thing this country's going to have to do that's not going to cost her one nickel as far as black folks is concerned. She's going to have to create an atmosphere that will create, for the first time, a trust that black folks will have for white America. Now, how do you do this? You got to let that Indian loose, my red brother, off the reservation. We're going to have to free the Puerto Rican. We're going to have to free the Mexican. And as much as Jewish America wants to play games with the system and make itself believe that this system is not after them too, I guess every Jew in America would almost have to paint his face as black as mine to find out what Gentiles are saying and scheming and plotting, and then realize that we tied up in a sick, racist country. Now, once we as black folks can see other minority groups, then for the first time we can create the atmosphere in our mind and say, you know, it's going to be all right. And then we can trust it. But if this country thinks for one minute that we're going to see what's going on with Jews on certain jobs, that see that the Indian is still up on the reservation, see that the Puerto Rican has problems, see to it that the Mexican-American has problems. If this is the atmosphere that white America is going to come to black folks and say, okay, brother, just lay down, I'm going to take care of everything, and we saying we can't trust it, and it's just going to be cats with their hand out saying, okay, bring the money in, but we don't trust you. This is what the statement meant in the book. And in the article that you read, that it's going to take more than a job, it's going to take more than education, because we've had Ralph Bunches and Martin Luther Kings and Jackie Robinson, and we've had brilliant black folks for years. They've still been called nigger, they've still been given a bad job, and so we're saying that we got a young group, a young thinking trend today that's saying, okay, we want it all ended. We don't want a job because, see, the United States Constitution gives me a right to sit on a fence if I want to and not bother anybody and not have anyone bother me. And let me say this, that America is about 18 months away from a white revolution. Because, you see, a lot of people say, well, what's wrong with the colored man? And the reason his attitude is the way it is because he's poor and because he's in the ghetto. Well, I know a lot of black folks that's not poor and do not live in the ghetto that has militant attitudes. I know a lot of white folks in America that's poorer than black folks could ever be. And for instance, how many white folks have you ever met that would hire a white hillbilly to be their chauffeur to come into their house? At least black folks did get to drive the best cars, get to eat the best of foods, because we work for white folks. And if poverty was the only thing you needed to cause riots, white folks in this country, Appalachia and the Ozarks, would have been rioting 200 years ago. And so now when we alleviate that it can't be poverty that's causing riots because poor white folks ain't rioting, then what is it? It's the insults. And if the poor white man had to not only be poor, but go through the insults that black folks have in this country, he would have been riding. Now, today he's going through these insults because he have to sit back now and look at a ride in Detroit, and then 6 months later, Henry Ford go out and hire 6,000 black folks in 2 days. And so this is the first time he's ever had to sit back. It's the first time he's had to turn on television and look at the networks all at once, tell it like it is. And he's getting very insulted because he believes all of these things that America have told him about black folks. He believes everything he's been able to see. He read his history book, and he never read black folks in his history. And now he turns on television, and he sees that we had a history. He looks at the show, like the very wonderful show that Bill Cosby did, where he was talking about black folks, and now he's getting insulted. And so because of all of this and the ingredients that it takes to destroy a country, and I feel we headed to this, this is what I meant by the statement that we're not going to buy off black folks. We can solve this problem, but it's going to have to be with sincere, honest effort and not just another trick.
Mr. Gregory, we shall begin taking calls from our Night Call listeners, and we'll take our first call from Lexington, Kentucky. Mrs. Tarpey is hearing Night Call over WBKY-FM. Good evening, Mrs. Tarpey. Your question.
I just wanted to tell Mr. Gregory that I just finished his book, Write Me In, and agreed with everything he said and in his candidacy, and I would like to know where we could write if we wanted to receive some of these Dick Gregory for President bumper stickers and buttons that he has pictured, and, you know, what address he could write to if he wanted to send him any contributions.
Well, you would write me Dick Gregory, 1451 East 55th Street, Chicago, Illinois, or write Dick Gregory, Chicago, Illinois, and I would still get the letter.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling. This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number, and of course you may call us collect, and our guest tonight is Mr. Dick Gregory. Our next call is from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Mr. CeeLo is hearing Night Call over WAMO-FM. Good evening, sir. Your question.
Mr. Gregory.
Yes, brother.
How you doing?
Pretty good, thank you.
You know, you're on a ballot in this state.
I know that.
And I was wondering if several other states nominate Mr. Cleaver. Would that mean you'd still go ahead and campaign?
Oh, yes. I am a candidate, as a write-in candidate. There's a few states that have put me on the ballot, or are thinking about putting me on the ballot, but I'm still running as a write-in presidential candidate, and I feel that Cleaver has many ideas. I think that although we're going in the same route, he has one way of solving problems, and I have another way of solving problems, and I think it's going to be very healthy for America to hear, you know, everybody's way.
I see. Do you intend to campaign?
Oh, yes, I intend to campaign very much. And then again, let me say, when we say campaign, and there's many times that I could come, like, to your area, and you would not know I was there, simply because, you know, in the political arena as we know it today, which I would refuse to get involved with, you have 40 advanced men that would come into your area, and they got a handbook that say the signs must be handmade, and, you know, you get 10,000 people at the airport, and this and that. I do not have the money for this type of campaign. I don't intend, if I had the money, to spend it this type of way, tricking people. I have one real good plus for me is I have a book out called, and I'm not saying it to sell it because you can go to the library and read it for free, called Write Me In. Now, the interesting thing about this book is the first time in the history of American political arena that there is a book that had been written pertaining to the platform. Now, Rockefeller and Humphrey, they'll spend X amount of hundreds of thousands of dollars to take out a two-minute television spot nationally. And what can you learn about a man in 2 minutes? If this country would set up a type of attitude that if you run for a national office, you know, put a book out where we can get hold to it for 95 cents, and not only can I sit and read about you and your basic ideas and your platform, but I have a document that I can come back to you four years later and say, hey, look, buddy, this is what you said you would do. And so this is going to be the biggest part of my campaign, the fact that I have this book out that states every way that Dick Gregory would solve the problems if he was elected president. As far as the state of Pennsylvania, I'll be talking with the peace and freedom people there in the next couple of days, and I'll be in the state for about 3 or 4 days. Thank you.
Thank you for calling, sir. This is Night Call in New York. Our guest is Mr. Dick Gregory calling in tonight, and we are going to part for station identification, and then we'll be coming right back with more phone calls. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Dick Gregory after station identification. Call it a social pressure valve. The voice of the ghetto. The voice of disgust. The voice of hope. Call it what you will, it's the voice of the people. Night Call lets people talk, and experts on the phone anywhere in the country or world offer answers to some of the problems. Having a heart-to-heart squawk, at least it gets people talking, first about their problems and eventually to each other. Night Call has a potential cast of 200 million Americans, and we now cover 50 stations in 40 cities. It could just be the most important listening post on the air today because it starts people talking. A program you should listen to, a forum to speak for yourself. If we don't start talking to each other, we'll end up shouting, and there's no telling where we'll wind up after that. Night Call, every weeknight on this station. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call. Area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Dick Gregory about the next president. Again, Del Shields.
And we continue to take calls to our guest tonight, Mr. Dick Gregory. And our next caller is hearing Night Call over WLIB-FM. He's Mr. Sicacio, who's hearing Night Call over, or from, rather, Malvern, Long Island. Good evening, sir.
Good evening. Mr. Gregory.
Yeah, brother, how are you?
Fine, thank you. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
What are your qualifications, so to speak?
What are my qualifications?
Yes. You don't do much advertising, and this is about the second time I've heard that you were running for presidency. Do you think you have a very good chance?
Well, one, I have one vote, which is mine. The chance, the chance for me is left up to America. I will campaign. My qualifications is this. I have the wisdom and knowledge to have enough sense to know that if tonight you appointed me or elected me president of NYU, right? Now, I know nothing about nuclear physics, but I have enough wisdom and knowledge to go out and bring in the best mind in nuclear physics money can buy and put him over the physics department, to go out and bring in the best mathematician to put him over the math department, to no better than to bring in a friend of mine just because they're very close to me and put them over the art department, to just because you appointed me the president of the university and you wanted to be over the English department to know to go out and bring in the best mind in English to put over the English department, and then there'd be no doubt that NYU would be one of the greatest schools on the face of this earth. I think this country should be run the same way. I don't feel that the post office should be a political job for the Postmaster General. I think we should go out and bring in the best mind we can find to run the post office. I feel that every form of running this country should be brought in. For instance, if I was elected president, who do I feel could make a good Secretary of State? I say right off the bat, Ralph Bunche. But there might be 10,000 other people. So I would say Ralph Bunche, but I would set up a committee of people that could review and then give me the recommendations, and I got enough sense to look at the recommendations that would be coming in and say, you know, Charlie, these three guys here could do a better job than Ralph Bunche as far as recommendations, so these are the way we'd pick them. And this is what I would do, and I think that if not only Dick Gregory, I think anyone who's elected president of the United States would run this country the way it should be run, and not through political muscle, but through statesmanship ability, we can solve all the problems this country's going to be confronted with. If we do not do this, then I'm mighty afraid that this country will not be the America that we want it to be, or the America won't be existing in the next 4 years. Thank you.
I have to agree with you on that. Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Are you still with me? I have to agree with you on the Postmaster General and all those political jobs. I have to agree with you because I don't think it's fair. I like to see more qualified people do these things, you know?
That's right, and I feel when we get qualified people to do these things, well, look the way Henry Ford runs his plant. if he brought in his friendship or the guy who married his daughter, if he brought him in and put him in the paint department, we might have some bad-looking cars.
Exactly.
But we bring in the, and if we can think this much for an automobile that's not going to be in existence 10 years from now, how come we can't think the same way for the federal government?
Yeah, that's right.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you.
This is Night Call in New York. We'll take our next call from Boston. Mr. Smolian, and I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly, is hearing Night Call over WBUR-FM. Your call, sir.
Hello, Mr. Gregory.
Hello, brother. How are you?
I just got finished reading an article in an August 1967 Esquire about you this morning over breakfast.
Right.
Quite a surprise hearing you on the radio. I sympathize with the views that I read in the article, and believe me, being around the college scene here in Boston with political candidates running right and left, it's good to hear a voice that talks common sense occasionally.
Thank you.
But listening to you just now on the radio, I've been wondering, this whole business about trying to point a cabinet, trying to interact with our Congress, don't you feel you might end up running into sort of a brick wall with the organized system, which is already invaded Washington so much? And I mean, is there any way, direct way, you think you may be able to overcome some of the ways the organized system has taken over?
I think, one, there's a possibility that we might be gone beyond the point of no return. But at the same token, we have to use every available means to try to change, and in the process of trying to change, we might find out we've gone beyond the point of no return. I think with television and the mass communication system, I don't believe that if a president of the United States is honest, that if he would use the television stations, the networks, and the educational stations to come to the American people and lay his program down and say, look, I'm the president of the United States today. I'm not interested in being the president of the United States 4 years from now if I have to do this and do that to get your vote. I'm going to give it to you. And I think if the president of the United States would use the television, the mass communications, the radio, the newspapers honestly and fairly and squarely, I don't believe it's anything that Congress could buck him on, because when you have the attitude of the people and the people understand your program and you break it down to the simplest voter and say, this is what we have to do and this is what, and this is the reason why, now let your congressman come on and tell you his views why we shouldn't. And I think many of the social programs that we need today, we hear the president get up and he makes a speech at such and such a university, and then he gives his number one foreign policy speech, speaking at a commencement exercise. Give your foreign policy speech to the people that's going to be affected by it, and this is all of America. And I feel personally that this country, the attitude of saving this country lies with the mass communication system. 100 years ago, we had presidents, but we didn't have television and radio. Today we have, and if the president would only wake up and realize that I got to quit hiding things, I got to quit making decisions in little back rooms, and let America know, there is no doubt in my mind that America in this country, if LBJ got on television in the morning and say, I want all Americans to run around the block 3 times every morning at 6 o'clock, you'd be surprised how many Americans would do it just because he said it. And you'd be surprised how many Americans would think accordingly if they listened to the president and understood what he was saying and realized, you know, he's right. And to me, this would be my number one means of seeing to it that America would understand. And once America understands, you have no problem with the senators and the congressmen. Thank you.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so very much. Our next call is coming in from Columbus, Ohio. Mr. Gregory and Mr. Kenny is hearing Night Call over WOSU-FM. Your question, Mr. Kenny.
Mr. Gregory, I'll make it very brief and to the point, and I'd like to know how long it will take for the black and white people of this country to get together and sit down and help solve these problems and stop this infernal fighting going on and tearing up. Is there any way at all that somewhere or other that something can be done? I'd like to ask you a second part to this question. Is this country going to get in a revolution? Do you think it's going to be happening right here between us right here in America rather than Russia or Europe and someplace over there?
let me ask it this way. I don't think we're going to get into a war of black and white, because the issue in this country is not black against white. It's right against wrong. If we do not come to grips with the problem and solve the problem, and we're going into a revolution, and it's not going to be, you know, like black folks shooting white folks and white folks shooting black folks. You got a youth element in this country. 58% of America's population is 26 years old and down. And in the next 8 years, 80% of America's population will be 26 years old and down. And the young folks in this country today is sick and tired of a corrupt system that says one thing in the Constitution and do something else. And I would say, you say, how long will it be? Can we stop arguing and fighting among us? I would say a system that we depend on our leaders, not just the politicians. But in a capitalistic system, for some reason, people seem to worry about their job more so than they worry about the Constitution being carried out. This system was set up as a democratic system, a democracy, and this was meant to prevail first and the capitalistic system second. And as long as this country sides on the side of capitalistic thinking, like, oh, if I speak out, I'll lose my job. If I do this, I won't be liked. If you put this ahead of the United States Constitution, which is the most beautiful document ever been inked in the history of the world, then this country will go down in mass destruction. And I would say that just not the politicians, if the principals, if the school teachers, if the guys on the job, if the ministers, if the mothers would just, you know, let their kids do what is right. There's a whole lot of people that would not let their kids bring a certain minority group kid home with them, be he black, white, Indian, or Jewish, because they are worried about what the neighbors would think. And as long as this attitude prevailed, then I would say that revolution is right around the corner, sir.
Yes, sir. Well, thank you, Mr. Gregory,
thank
very
you so much.
Thank you for calling, sir.
Bye.
This is Night Call in New York, area code 212-749-3311. That's our national telephone number, area code 212-749-3311. Remember, we always welcome your comments and your conversations with our guest tonight, Mr. Dick Gregory, who's calling in from New York. This time we go out to Omaha, Nebraska. Mr. Leaf is hearing Night Call over KBON. Your question, Mr. Leaf.
Hello.
Hello, brother.
How are you?
Thank you.
Well, I'm a great admirer of you, and I have, you know, a lot I could say, but it's more of a matter of advice. I'm the teacher corps, and we're working in a Negro area, and I was wondering if there's some kind of advice you could give me towards the a white person like myself gaining confidence in the Negro community to be able to really communicate, or is it possible?
Well, let me put it this way. I don't know, you know, what type of training you have in a job corps to go into the black community. But, for instance, had you joined the Peace Corps and had decided and they was going to send you to Africa, they would send you to the University of Chicago for 26 weeks, and you would learn the African culture according to the area you're going. You would learn his language. You would learn his foods. You'd learn his likes and his dislikes. And as much as you could learn in 26 weeks, with that briefing and understanding, plus the will to want to help this group of people, that's a pretty good way to be sent off. And now I say, how much did we learn about the black ghetto before we were sent into it? How much do you know about customs and habits? You see, there's a lot of white people that sincerely, honest to goodness, want to help black people, but they're not aware of the fact that a black man today would rather have you call him boy than would rather have you call him nigger than call him boy. So all at once, white America said, well, I will never use the word nigger, but they will turn around and say, well, how you doing, boy? How you feel, boy? And will say this to a black man who's 21 years old, who's 35 years old, who's 90 years old, and sincerely and honestly do not realize what effect this have in the black community. Now, once you refer to a Negro as boy, or you have white people sit down and say, let me tell you a story, and then tell them the story and say, you know, I was with this gal, and we automatically know he's talking about a colored woman. And so if you're not aware of this, and this happens the first day you deal in the black community, the Negro will not many times say anything to you about it, he will not throw you out. But from that point on, there's that block. And I would say there's a lot of books out, especially more today than ever before. There's been a lot of books out talking about the problems in the black community, talking about the black man, talking about the relationship of why these problems exist. Let me give you just one quick example. America would not be the America today had it not been for her black folks. Let me put it this way. Go all the way back to early America, and Britain controlled the world's market on export. France controlled the world as far as culture was concerned, and Spain controlled the world as far as shipping. Now, how did America break through and become a world power? Because of her black slaves, she was able to put her cotton and her tobacco on the world market cheaper than any nation in the history of the world, and consequently, through this, she became a world power. Well, somewhere she got to look at black folks and say, thanks, baby, for making us what we are. Had this not happened, America today would have been another South Africa.
Mr. Gregory, Mr. Leaf, we're having a little breakup on the line, Mr. Leaf, and I'll have to disconnect you, but thank you so much for calling. This is Night Call in New York. We'll come right back with more calls right after station identification. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Dick Gregory after station identification. Listen to the voices of Night Call.
Large numbers of black people in this country are coming to the point where almost no action, violent or nonviolent, legal or illegal, is looked upon as being the sort of action that will help. And I think that's a dangerous point for us, where we reach the point where nothing is likely to help us. And it means, I think, almost the beginning of suicide.
Julian Bond, a black politician, is pessimistic, and a white ethics professor has faith.
I don't agree we're all upset. In spite of the many faults of the white people, I think there's a strong reservoir of compassion in a lot of white people in this country, and a strong desire to see that the black man does get his right.
These voices, plus your own voice of question or comment, are Night Call. Speak for yourself. Speak for yourself, collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Dick Gregory about the next president. Again, Del Shields.
And once again, a welcome to the Night Call stations who join us every night for the second half hour. Tonight we are talking with Mr. Dick Gregory, who's calling in from New York. And we have calls standing by in Minnesota as well as Ohio. We'll take our first call from Burnsville, Minnesota. Mr. Carlson is hearing Night Call over KSJN-FM. Your question, Mr. Carlson.
Yes, Mr. Gregory.
Yes, brother. How are you?
I'm pretty good. I was just wondering if, since there seems to be a lot of no comment from the white community with reference to some of the positions of the Negroes, you see quite a minority of the white people supporting some of the movements, whether they're the greatest majority of the people would be more in favor of the concept of black economy in the ghetto areas instead of the movement towards the integrationist philosophy. Do you feel that there would be more advancement for the Negro in having his own economy in his area, such as the areas that exist now, develop those in a fashion that would make them first-rate areas instead of having the areas being not maintained by the absentee landlords?
Well, let's put it this way. We talk about, you know, segregation and integration and what have you. If the racism and the segregation did not exist in this country, we would not have to talk about, you know, black economics. Now, the fact that we, in a racist society, in a segregated system, the fact that America is not the democratic system and process the Constitution talks about, now, after we qualify this, then we can qualify and say, yes, black economics would serve the black community better under a system. You see, everybody gets upset when we talk about, everybody talk about black separatism. We're not talking about black separatism. We're saying that until America is thoroughly the America that the United States Constitution talks about, then for my benefit in the black community, please let me run my own shop. Please let me run my own store. For instance, in the black community, in a segregated system, and we can't blame it on the police department because he didn't have anything to do about segregated housing. It's like we talk about the stop and frisk law they're getting all over the country. The policeman didn't make that. The politicians got together, pushed it through, and he had to enforce it. But so we have a segregated pattern in town. The white cop lives in the white community, but he has to patrol my neighborhood 8 hours a day. He don't know nothing about me. The average one of them scared of me. Plus, he don't have to walk his dog in my community. When he gets off, he spends his 16 hours in a lily white neighborhood. If he lived in my neighborhood, he would be a policeman first. But he would give me the same amount of respect as that white cop has to give that white man in his community because he lives in that community, too. And so right now, with a racist, segregated system, we would be better off with black cops policing the black community. That's not saying because we have black cops in the community that we're not going to get arrested, that we're not going to be talking about police brutality, but at least the black cop knows that that's Mrs. Gregory's boy, and all right, son, get off the street, I'll give you another chance. The white cop don't know my mother. And so consequently, under a racist, segregated system, black economics, black men running their businesses, black men running their community, is the only way out. Once this system is completely and thoroughly integrated, like the Constitution says, then that theory will become as obsolete as racism should be today. Thank you.
Well, the other question was, we had a janitor that was in the city who was publicized in the paper who said he'd given up on the system of trying to be woven into the white community through integration, and he was looking for some funds to go to an area, I believe it was in Africa, I don't remember where it was specifically, because he had given up in it, and I wondered if there was ever a thought given to locating in an area that would be sort of like a pioneering start all over area, such as the United States was when it originally was founded, to develop, say, the areas that you feel that you're superior in with respect to the areas that the black race is better in, some of these areas of music and some of these, say, some of the construction areas, some philosophies, why they couldn't prove to be superior in another area, not necessarily within the continental limits of the United States, but in another area, then I don't know how this could come about, but
well,
you see, then if they proved that they could do some of these things that the white people doubt that they can do, that some of us believe that the Negro can do some things better than the white man. You see, there's a lot of segmentism in the movement itself. A lot of white.
That's people. Right. But let me just say this here. You see, what you're talking about is not the United States Constitution. You see, we are still dealing with the United States Constitution. Now, this might be a thought to entertain if the Constitution is tore up and don't exist anymore. But the United States Constitution do not say that I am to leave this country and go someplace and do what best what I think I can excel in. If I went along with it, 10,000 Negroes that live in the same neighborhood I live in don't go along with it because they're talking about the United States Constitution, and we still haven't solved the problem.
Well,
the problem is solving it under the existing laws, which is the United States Constitution and the attitude of the Declaration of Independence. If we want to get away from that, then the problems could be solved easy. I suppose all black folks disappeared in the morning.
Well, the we don't, I wasn't suggesting that. You see, the State Department came up with something that to me was unbelievable when they had authorized the Cubans to get free plane rides back to Cuba so that anyone, whether they were white, yellow, red, black, or any color or any race, could move at the expense of the taxpayer back to another area, such as the Indians. You know, we took the land away from the Indians, and they would be displacing the white people. But the
right.
So you see, this is a revolving circle. It ends up no place.
That's right. Yes.
The philosophy of the movement of the white people that are in favor of helping the black community is somewhat, to me, false. Because if they were really truly interested in helping, they'd be moving into the ghetto working directly instead of going back to white suburbia. And I think that that there's something that's missing here. The people that are backing some of the movements are false in their notions because they're doing it by remote control.
That's very true.
And so that I think that it has to come from the individual himself living in the ghetto, the solution, the true solution. I know that some communities contributed something as unusual as a garbage can to areas that had never had garbage cans.
Yeah.
And the people immediately used them.
But you see, the problem is bigger than me getting a garbage can. If the government would do a survey across the country and find out the amount, the people per acre. Let's take Los Angeles. In Los Angeles, there's 7.5 people per acre that lives in Los Angeles. In Watts, there's 27.9 people per acre that live in Watts. So naturally, my neighborhood is much dirtier than your neighborhood because I got 20 people more than you got throwing gum wrappers on the ground. So I don't need as much as a garbage can as much as I need more garbage collection. Because if I get the same amount of garbage collectors with 27.9 people per acre that white California, white Los Angeles have with 7.5 people per acre, we gonna have problems.
Mr. Carlson?
So, you know, this sounds good, but the problem is so vast and so complex. And believe me, if LBJ thought for 1 minute the problem was garbage cans, we'd be marching trying to get them garbage cans out the neighborhood. He'd run so many in there in the morning.
Oh, yeah,
and I think the basic problem is the United States Constitution, will this work? It's groovy. So the State Department said they'll send Cubans back free. So then the State Department said we'll send Irish back free. We'll send Italians back free. We'll send the Jewish people back free. We'll send black folks back to Africa. And then the Indians can have their country back.
Well,
Mr. Carlson, thank you so much for calling, sir.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
For your time.
This is Night Call in New York. We'll continue to take some calls, and this time from Cleveland, Ohio. Mr. Jones is hearing Night Call over WERE. Your question, Mr. Jones.
Yes. Before I ask my question, I just wanted to mention, say amen to what Dick was talking about before concerning ministers, educators, in other words, teachers, principals, and so forth, just following the Constitution, especially those people who always cry law and order. I myself happen to be a teacher, and I realize full well what it means to possibly buck the system in the capitalist system. Where it comes to teaching things that may possibly be unpopular in the neighborhood or in the community when, in fact, they are, of course, part and parcel of the Constitution. I've had personal experience with this, and it's tough because you're laying your job on the line. Even though you may be saying what is true and what you theoretically have a right to say, there are those who definitely will shut you up if they don't want to hear that. And primarily goes to the individual people who are living in the community who have their private bigoted ideas, but then they want it continued into their children and so forth. And this is more widespread, I think, than a lot of people think. They not only have it for themselves, they want this continued, and they don't want you to say anything differently. This is very much widespread. Well, anyway, my question had to do with Vietnam, and if you were elected president, what would you do about Vietnam?
Out,
I hope.
If I was elected president, first thing I'd do is come on television and explain to the American people that there is a Geneva Accord pertaining to Vietnam that says no foreign intervention.
Amen.
And I would live up to this Geneva Accord. We're talking about an honorable way out.
the most honorable way out is for America to go back and get that Geneva Treaty and say,
Amen.
America, because I firmly believe that if the masses of Americans knew that there is a Geneva Treaty that specifies what should go on in the number one thing, it says no foreign intervention, then all we got to do is say, this is what it is, this is the honorable way out, and then America for the first time would find out we got in there dishonorable. But what we're trying to say now, you know, I can't understand how in the world we can justify being in Vietnam to stop the communists when we sit back and let Greece, we let a democracy fall to the ground, and nobody, if we can justify being in Vietnam, then how come we not in South Africa liberating those people there? And let me tell you, when you sit and look at the head of the South Vietnamese police shoot point blank a Viet Cong that was caught. Now, we talk about revenge. Are we looking for revenge, or are we looking for the democratic process? And if this is what the American boys is being killed for, you just had an incident last week where the second man on the ticket, highest, ended up getting 5 years in jail because he advocated going to the peace table. And if this is what America will stand by and let her boys get killed for, that another government who we're trying to protect is running a Hitler type of Nazi regime, then America is in trouble. And I say to you that it's more than just pulling out of Vietnam. I would go to the UN if I was elected president, and I would say, would you please go in and see to it that we can first, before I worry about North or South Vietnam, I would say, what can we do to justify this wrong and do something with the people? Can we go in and build this country back up? Would you at the UN be willing to go in neutral under no flags and in our way say we sorry? And I'm sure people all over the world would put a faith back in America, because when you stop and think that we dropped more bombs on South Vietnam, who's supposed to be our friends, than we have on North Vietnam, it's like me coming to Cleveland and saying, you have rats in your house, I'm a rat expert, let me help you get rid of your rats. And you say, okay, Greg, I'm glad. What you gonna do? I say, all right, stand back, and I burn your house down to the ground. Well, I'm sure nobody else on the face of this earth will ever want Dick Gregory to help them get rid of their rats.
Mr. Gregory, I'm sorry, we'll have to stop for station identification. Mr. Jones, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you.
Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
More Night Call with Del Shields and guest Dick Gregory after station identification. In our city and state and all across the United States, people are talking about trouble, black and white trouble. Some call it racial tension, or see poverty as the real problem, or say law and order has given way to anarchy in our streets. Most people agree, at least, that there is a crisis, and we are a people with many unanswered questions. This station believes you deserve to ask your own questions and get some answers, or at least opinions, from people who should know what they're talking about. So we bring you Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show where you ask your questions and express your opinions to leaders such as John Lindsay, Ralph Abernathy, John Gardner, Stokely Carmichael, and Sergeant Shriver. Night Call, the new nationwide radio forum on important issues facing you and the rest of the nation. Night Call, each weeknight. Speak for yourself. Collect on Night Call, area code 212-749-3311 or 866-5010 to Dick Gregory about the next president. Again, Del Shields.
And we return to more of our listeners' calls, this time from New York. Mr. Muhammad Abdullah is hearing Night Call over WWRL, and he's calling in from East Orange, New Jersey. Your call, sir. Mr. Abdullah?
Yes, sir. You know, I'd like to say something. I'm listening to you, and you're very beautiful, brother.
Thank you, brother.
Because I see where all your energy is being thrown into something constructive. But, brother, I'd like to say this to you and millions of people who are listening right now, that our main purpose is to civilize people and to bring them towards a righteous way. I'm up in Jersey, and I'm not trying, but I'm getting my young brothers together, Caucasian and Asiatic. And I've had FBIs going to the parents' house, telling the kids to stay away from me, telling the parents. So it is difficult on this side, on the side of one who's righteous and has been practicing the righteous way, patience, respect, and understanding, and wisdom and knowledge. I'm having a great deal of difficulties, and I know I'm coming very close to a point of getting hurt. But even then, this is serving a point, because it's serving a purpose, rather, because I know that eventually that somebody will understand. I'm the one that walks around with the Arab, one of our original clothing from Arabia. And this is something that I love, because I've learned to return back to my original way. And I believe it's very beautiful. I not only believe it, but I know it. But I'd like to say this to you, Dick. And that is that it is very difficult for the white people today to accept the Asiatic black man. And will always be difficult for them to accept them. To accept us, because for that reason, that they have been brainwashed for thousands of years to accept a thing called white. And when they separate themselves from this thing called white, and accept the fact of them being Caucasian, and accept the fact of us being Asiatic, and that alone is the first start. And second of all, that our brothers get away from teaching our younger brothers of Christianity, which is not our way of living. And this will be the solution. But the white man does not want our people to leave Christianity, because Christianity has been the thing to keep us into this slavery, into the state of mind of dumb, deaf, and blind. I'm just hoping, and with the greatest of understanding, that our people accept themselves. I am not saying to walk the street with Arab clothes or to walk the street with suits, but to walk the street with patience, respect, and understanding. And there, that alone will bring us all together. Because we have the biggest problem right now, which the world is beginning to realize. And that is that mothership that's flying around up there, that they're trying to find out what the hell, where it's coming from. Because that mothership up there happens to be from another planet that is much more civilized than we are.
Thank you for calling, sir.
I appreciate it, and thank you, and good night.
Thank you so very much. Our next caller is Mr. Ettinger, is calling in from Cleveland, Ohio. He's hearing Night Call over WERE. Your call, sir.
I want to ask Mr. Gregory what he thinks of this new approach that we've discussed and hashed over here at Kent State University, which doesn't seem to have been tried yet. But every time we get together in a room, there's colored students and white students and Africans, everybody's there. We don't discuss the problems of the racial inequalities or the the gun laws and things like that. We've been discussing things like baseball, like sports, learning to accept each other, that they're not strange, that they got other things to say besides racism or something like that. And I think this approach is almost swallowed up by the other approach that people have been taking. We discuss the problems of pot, this is universal, or acid, or, girls, it doesn't make any difference, cars, but we realize that we communicate with each other on the basis of, we want to forget the color for a while, and we seem like when we walk out of the room, we're a lot closer than if we were just hashing over the problem of racism or something else, and I think that this idea, this approach is just, like, totally lost. I happen to be a Jew, but until you discuss something with someone who doesn't know anything about Jews, And you tell them you're Jewish, they can't believe it because they think maybe there's something wrong, The Jews are all strange. And I think they have the same approach with Negroes. But, you realize they're just the same, but you never get to realize that fact unless you discuss the same things, I mean, right away you're going to take opposite sides on racism or there's going to be opposite sides taken. But you can discuss the Browns, the Tigers, anybody. It doesn't make any difference. And I think this is a much better way, at least it works on a small scale. And I wonder what you think about...
Let me say this, when black folks and white folks and Jews and Africans and Arabs and Christians all get together in a room and discuss baseball, this is great, but I think people all over the world is looking at what's going on in America, and if you was going to that college to learn how to be a nuclear physicist or a doctor, and you tried discussing baseball in your med class instead of talking about that body and how you're going to save it.
Yeah, but we go in the
Let me just finish.
Yeah, go ahead.
And you tried to talk about football and track instead of talking about neutrons and protons, that nuclear physicist class should be in trouble. I think today that we can't talk about baseball today. I think if you and I are sitting in the same room together after we finish talking about what's going on around us, then we can sit and we can talk about baseball. I don't think we can duck the issue of talking about this, talking about that, when what's going around us, in particular in Cleveland, Ohio, after what has happened there the last week when school starts back again and you and black folks and white folks and Africans get together, if all y'all can discuss in September is baseball after just what happened in Cleveland, then I say something's wrong.
Yeah, but I think you're looking at the top part of the problem instead of the bottom part. If we and I had accepted each other as equals to begin with, we wouldn't have it, right? So now we have a real ideological split, you know? It's like, I know kids, and you know, that I'm 22, they wouldn't sit on it. They wouldn't think that the colored man may know about football or something else, you know? But we sit down and we discuss the, I think you don't get the generic problem. I don't think you hit the base of the problem. I think we've turned the entire situation upside down. Because once you learn, man, they're just like we are, you know, you accept the things. I think it's all, like all upside down. I mean, I'd like to have a huge meeting where we could have thousands of people just get together and just discuss this kind of idea. You know, the problems that everybody has, bringing up kids, all that kind of stuff, you know, books. And I think we'd get a lot, at least it seems to work on a small scale. I mean, I'm not trying to squelter the gargantuan problems that we have today. Of course I'm not trying to do that, but it's like you hash it over and you rehash it, and it doesn't get us anywhere. It doesn't bring us any closer.
Yeah,
but somehow when we walk out of that room, man, you know, you see him the next day, you don't figure, oh, we just had a big fight about racism. I can say, man, look what happened to the Lions yesterday, how they got stopped.
Okay, let me just get off the racial issue for a minute. There's a lot of mothers and fathers in America who goes to bed tonight with the pain that their son is dead in Vietnam because America, when she should have been talking about Vietnam, was talking about baseball and talking about basketball. It looks like it's going to be a lot of America's sons alive in the very near future because all at once, for some reason, we start talking about Vietnam on the college campus, in the home, in the high school, and in the church. And baby, let me say, had the church and the school and the college and the home start talking about Vietnam 3 years ago, like they're talking about it now, it'd be a lot of boys that will never talk about baseball again in life, that not only could talk about baseball, might have a chance of playing that American game again, but they did now. Thank you so much.
Mr. Edinger, thank you for calling,
thank
sir.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Gregory, we don't have time for any more calls, but we've got about 30 seconds. Where do we go from here, as I generally ask?
Well, brother, let me say to you, and I hope that your show, and I say this because I'm very social conscious, I've been from one end of the country to the other, that I hope that your show can get into every city in America and let the people talk and discuss basic ideas, because we have a communication system, and if we use it right, we will solve the problems. If we invent a cure for polio or cancer and put it underneath a basket and not give it to people, then we still got the problem. And I say to you, thank you for inviting me on your show, and thanks to America for listening and being so kind to call in.
Mr. Gregory, thank you so much for being our guest on Night Call. This is Del Shields in New York. Good night and peace.
Night Call, the new nationwide listener call-in show on vital issues. Tomorrow night, same time, same station, Morris Abram, president of the American Jewish Committee on American Violence and Black Anti-Semitism. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly our own personal opinions. Speak for yourself on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.